Is he smiling? He doesn't answer no questions. Well, they have these huge groups of devotees that come, and then they disappear. Does that mean they're just passing through, or just...
No, they came for a tour.
Oh, okay.
I'm leaving tonight for tour this time.
Oh, so that group was with you?
Yeah.
Oh.
I wasn't there because I want my wife to take part in the preaching program.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm with them then later.
Okay. I was wondering, there's so many people, and now there's nobody. What happened? Class was that bad?
Something I said.
It was you.
That's another advantage, blame it on the rock.
Blame it on the rock. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
All six schools of Vedic philosophy aim to describe the nature of the external world and its relationship to the individual, to go beyond the world of appearances to ultimate reality, and to describe the goal of life and the means for obtaining this goal. Right, but we notice in here is that what's beyond, but the Lord isn't a major part of this. That's the outstanding feature. Well, I mean for us, means... that they still are working according to Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, that's because they follow the Vedic system. So they're going to describe the living entity and material energy, then through their process how to go to beyond that to their ultimate goal of being outside the effect of the material world, or at least outside of the material world's ability to give you trouble. Because all of them go beyond into liberation except karma mimamsa. But their idea is that you liberate yourself from material disturbance by always being in a pious situation. You know what I'm saying? But then it's working on that if the pious situation is good, automatically everything will be good. But the thing is, it's not necessarily, it's what you do with it that makes it, you know, like that. So, but in any case, they're all dealing with that. So that's why the Supreme Lord, though discussed, is not a really prominent feature because they're not trying to develop a relationship with him.
Mm.
Right? The only reason you're knowing the material world is to get out of it.
Mm.
Right? So actually it just comes down to oneself. Right? So for Vaishnavism, then self-realization means realizing our position as the self as servant of the Lord. Right? But in the way of everybody else, self-realization means realizing the self as spiritual and transcendental, but it's for one's own purpose. So it is selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a, you know, most superior selfishness. Right? You can't get beyond this as quality of high-grade selfishness. You know, how you say it? Respectable selfishness.
Unavoidable.
Yes. Right? Because some will say that this selfishness starts with this in, you know, this self-realization. That was one of the complaints of the me generation, is that they're ones that really started as a culture getting into, you know, the Eastern philosophies and that, and the concept of self-realization. But it was all about themselves. And so one will say, no, but self-realization is about relationship with God. But if you think about it, then the New Age, what aspect of self-realization is it dealing with? It's not, right? Yeah, it's not, yeah, Brahman, it's not dealing with my relationship with the Lord. It's dealing with me improving myself and improving my happiness. So it is, they're taking in line with these other schools of that, you know, that self-realization is still self-centered rather than God-centered, right? That's the difference. Vaishnavism, the self is the center, but God's the center of the self. But these others, with God not being there, then it's just selfish. Yes?
Does Nyaya deal with so what when we obtain liberation? I mean, it goes for liberation, right?
Yes.
So basic, then what?
Then
just Haribol?
Haribol, yeah. Means you're not doing anything, so you don't need to be conscious, so it's just a really good deep sleep. You know, eternal deep sleep. You know? I mean, after a rough day, what do you want to do? Have a good sleep. So that's it. After a rough time in the material world, then they want a good sleep. But the problem is when they wake up, then it's boring. Then they come back here. So, yes.
So meaning that except for those who accept the personality of God as Bhagavan, nobody can actually talk about self-realization as it is, as long as they try to approach it from man or karma.
Means they can discuss self-realization, but it's incomplete. So in that way, you could say, yes, other than Vaishnavas, no one actually understands self-realization. They don't understand God, self-realization, the material world, the relationship, you know, the actual process, anything. Though they may be following the rituals, right, as was being discussed by Lahiri Babu, is that one is following the externals, the forms of the Brahminical culture, but one can either follow them for karma, for liberation, or for devotion. So in the same way is that they can be following these forms, you know, trying to be peaceful, making a sattvic lifestyle, trying to get more knowledge, or they understand that the soul is separate from the body. And, you know, so many things may be of value that they're doing. But the problem is because God's not actually included, then it actually is just more self-centered. Right? But it is, you could say, they're following the forms of self-realization, but they're not actually getting the full benefit, because unless you understand your relationship with God, you don't actually understand who you are. To know that you're the spirit soul, that's only the beginning, but the spirit soul, his purpose is serving the Lord. So if you don't know that, then you won't actually know what to do. You know, like let's say I know that this is an oven. And so that's all I know, and that's all I want to know. But I don't want to know what it's for, what you can do with it, or anything like that. So you would say is that, yes, they know it's an oven, but they don't really know it's an oven. So like you're saying, it's both. It's that we would say in the broad-minded aspect that that's all the adhikar they have. So that's all the more that they understand. So for their level of realization, they're fine. But at the same time, as for ultimate realization, then it's not actually very solid.
Their vastu traya is actually incomplete, and it's not wrong, but it's incomplete.
It's
from
incomplete.
The very beginning, from
yes.
Sambandha.
Yes.
It means whatever they're building up on that, it will never be complete.
No, can't. It means it's like what Prabhupada gives the example of a math equation. If your first, you know, part of the equation is wrong, the rest will automatically be wrong. So their definition of the Lord, the material energy, and the living entity being not complete, that means their process that they deal with that can't be complete, and their goal can't be complete. But it's not that it's based on authority. That's its strength. And that it is, you know, elements of it are correct. The problem is their conclusion or how they construct the whole thing together. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like you have some bricks and some cement and sand and different tools. Now, you bring an actual, you know, bricklayer, then he'll combine those things together and make something nice. But you have real things, but if you bring a bunch of kids, they'll also do something with it. You know, but it's that you may not really, you may have wished they hadn't. You know what I'm saying? Because they'll do the bona fide things. The cement will be mixed with water and all that. But, you know, what happens with the cement and the bricks, you know, you kind of wish hadn't happened. You know? Okay. Okay. All six schools of Vedic philosophy aim to describe the nature of the external world and its relationship to the individual, to go beyond the world of appearances to ultimate reality. Because what you see, the forms, is something beyond that. So they all accept that there's more beyond the forms. There's something beyond. So you have that element of the supreme, that potency and all that. But it's only for the purpose of the living entity getting out of the material world. And to describe the goal of life and means for obtaining this goal. So with that understanding, what you will process, you'll follow, and therefore what result you'll get. Right? So they all explain this very nicely. In this attempt, the six philosophies divide their course of study into two major categories: the study of unmanifest reality and the study of manifest reality. In Nyaya philosophy, both aspects of reality are divided into 16 major divisions, called padarthas. See the chart below. These 16 philosophical divisions are Praman, the sources of knowledge; Prameya, the object of knowledge; Shamshaya, doubt or the state of uncertainty; Prayojana, the aim; Drishtanta, example; Siddhanta, doctrine; Avyaya, the constituents of inference; Tarka, hypothetical argument; Nirnaya, conclusion; Bada, discussion; Jalpa, wrangling; Vedanta, irrational argument; hate vibhasha, specious reasoning. It means you're reasoning like according to like a kangaroo as opposed to a platypus. The species is different, so it's
they think in completely different ways.
What does it mean actually?
Fallacious.
Okay, spacious. Specious. Specious. Yeah, English is a weird language.
Yeah.
Chala, unfair reply; Jati, generality based on a false analogy; and Nigrahastana, the grounds for defeat. Right. So then here's these 16 divisions. In other words, they're saying that these two are divided because it's Nyaya, remember. It's not that means these are the things that are there, but your process of knowledge and your process of discussion are going to be logic. So these are the 16 elements, or the, what do you call it, constituents. Right? How do you say, call them? Divisions. Okay. There's 16 divisions of studying reality. And that means both the material reality and the what's beyond. Right? The manifest and the unmanifest. So they would use the same system for both. Right? So Praman, four sources of valid knowledge: perception, pratyaksha. Okay, so you see here is then, if we look at the two pages, then you have, means you have four sources of knowledge. You have one, perception, inference, comparison, and testimony, like that. And so he goes to great length to establish why these are used and not others. Right, and then you have the details within that, and then the prameya is what would be means praman is your what do you call it, source of knowledge; prameya, the object of knowledge. So then, what are the different things that the 12 objects that knowledge would pertain to? Right. So in other words, when he gives 12, it means everything else is included in these 12. Right. It's not that he only deals with these and everything else is, doesn't matter. It means everything else goes into here. Right. Then you have your doubt, which is, you know, fine. Your prayojana is fine. Your example, that's fine, is used. Your doctrine or siddhanta, that actually is consistent, that's proper. Right? Then inference, is if it's used properly, is also useful. Right? Then now is where you're different. Now starting with eight, these are where different problems start coming in. Like that. It means, in other words, you're using the process of logic, but not necessarily in the right way. Tarka is your argument, so it may be good, it may be not, but the point is you're interested in an argument. Right? It means you're using argument, that's because the other person has a doubt or a difference, that's fine. But if you actually just like argument, then it's a misapplication. Right? Your nirnaya means your conclusion, that's also correct, but it has to be based on your siddhanta. Right? But if it's only on winning your argument, then it's also a problem. In other words, you'll come up with a conclusion that you win the argument, though it wasn't what you started out to prove. You just started the argument, they started something, but you have to win. So even if you present something bogus, as long as it wins the argument, you'll do it. But if that conclusion is according to Siddhanta, that's actually what you're trying to do. That's real logic. Right? Bada is just discussion, it's just going back and forth. So you're just spending time. But yes.
This is a philosophical way of establishing the truth.
Yes. Right? Yes.
But it seems like the actual mechanics of logic, they're intertwined, or they're the tools, or does this define those things?
Means it, see, this is Nyaya. So this is the 14th book of Vedic knowledge. So it's the process for logically analyzing and presenting anything, right? But Gotama has used it as a philosophy, right? So we're studying it as a philosophy, but at the same time as we're coming in contact with the technique of it, right? Does that make sense? So this is just what they'll use to establish it. So we'll use the same things. So we're trying to establish what's right and what's also to avoid. Like that. So, jalpa, you just say things just to say it. It doesn't actually have necessarily any meaning. It's just useful in your argument. So that's just jalpa. You're just wasting time. Right? Pajalpa means really wasting time. So jalpa is just a waste of time. Like that. Irrational reasoning, Vedanta, you're not connecting the points. You know, but this should be like this. No, but on Tuesday, you know, you had a cake. What does that got to do with anything? You know, it's so people do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, hetvabhasha, specious reasoning means faulty. Means they don't connect the points. That also that you're showing some logic, it doesn't. It's not actually logical. There's a gap in it, or it doesn't connect, or anything like that. Unfair reply, chala.
Could we just specifically irrational and specious, what is the precise difference between these?
It's coming late. Could Hitvabhas means Hetuabhas, which means a shadowy cause. So that might inform.
you give some kind of cause, but it's not really a real cause. And the other one, it means you may be using right things, but you're not putting them together properly. You know, it's just like, you want to say?
I just want to say that all this comes later.
Okay.
I would suspect that Hetvabhas is an improper premise, whereas the Nintendo is actually...
Okay. I mean, you're just not, that's what he'll get into very much details. It's like fire, smoke comes from fire, but fire doesn't have to have smoke, but smoke must have fire. So if I say, because there's fire, there must be smoke, that's faulty.
Yeah.
But if I say there's smoke, therefore there must be fire, that's solid. So you can use it one way, but not the other. This is how you can understand if somebody's speaking properly. Chala is just you shift. The word one way, they use it another way. They give it a different meaning. And so they argue on the different meaning, though your meaning one. So it's unfair. You know, that's not how it is. Generality based on a false analogy. You use an analogy that doesn't apply and use it to, you know, people. All these things, you can see, these are very, very, very common. Right? And nigrahastan is just how you can defeat. Means it can be used properly is that you've given the right conclusion, therefore you defeated him, or you were just expert at arguing and defeated. Right? So that's why Krishna says of all these, he's Siddhanta. Right, Krishna in the Gita says, of logic, I am Siddhanta. That means of these 16, he is Siddhanta, because that's the actual essential thing. If you have that, everything else has meaning. But if you're discussing this without Siddhanta, it doesn't have any meaning. Mm. So that's the important thing to note, is it's that logic is not meant for argument. Logic is meant to establish conclusion. Mm. Yes?
Right, would that be because if you don't have Siddhanta, you don't have a substance, so you're just floating around the body?
Yes, yes. But the thing is people take their modes as substantial. And so they really feel that their karma or their jnana or their sense enjoyment or their atheism or whatever it is very, has substance. So they're convinced, but the problem is it's not Siddhanta, it's not coming from authority. And so therefore it doesn't work. Okay? And then within Praman, then the perception, ordinary, intermediate, and extraordinary. And the extraordinary will have different particular classes, association, intuition, right? Inference, then there's statements, there's reason, there's example, universal position, and conclusion. So when we use the Panchanga Nyaya, that's the main presentation, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what's being used. Because why that? One would say no, but perception is that, what is the meaning of what's beyond? You know, in other words, if there's a doubt, that means there's something you don't see. So it has to be inferred to. Right? Does that make sense? A comparison, you still have to actually know one thing to do the other. So technically, according to us, comparison is the same as inference that I know of. Right? Because we deal with three. There's 10 total. Right? He only's brought out 4. Because he's proved that the other ones, this one is the same as this, this one's the same as that. He goes through all other logicians and all other things that actually these 10 points that they make, they all fit within these. And so all these sub-points, someone will take, you know, intermediate is something different. It's not actually perception, or extraordinary is not perception. So what he does is prove that all these are within these. Right? So then this 5 is actually what you're doing, because there's something known and then there's something unknown. Right? But now, this process must be based on testimony, or shabda, right? Authority. When it's based on authority, so therefore then you can see one thing, and then you apply that authority to the other, then it's not speculation. Right? Then it becomes real. And then you bring it to where you can see it with your senses, right? That's why example is given. Right? Does that make sense? So those are the things. So then prameya, what you're actually discussing, right? So in other words, these are the ways you're going to establish the knowledge, right? And then what you're going to establish are these. Then atma, the body, the 5 senses, the objects of the senses, cognition, mind, activity, mental defects, attachment, hatred, infatuation, rebirth, results, suffering, and freedom from suffering. Right, so then everything will go there.
All the scriptures, the Quran, is they all structured according to that?
Means when they're making a presentation, yes. Means everybody uses the logic. So like when, Sukadeva is talking to Parikit, or Markandeya to Vidura, like this, they're all using the system. Like Prabhupada, he's quoting from, I think, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he says that in the Vaishnav society, then whatever is not presented according to this Panchanga Nyaya is not accepted as a real discussion. Like that.
The Panchanga Nyaya, that was meant here?
Is under inference. Yeah. Why it's inference is because one thing is seen and one thing's not, so you're trying to prove what's seen. In other words, you see both, but the other person doesn't. So therefore, you're using the principle of inference to show them. You know what I'm saying? You know that wherever there's smoke, there is fire. The other person doesn't understand that. He sees a mountain, he sees smoke. He wonders, why is the mountain smoking? You know? So therefore, then you explain it and prove, because there's fire, therefore there's smoke. Is that something you said? Okay. So then, Praman. Praman will be these 4, right? Praman, sources of valid knowledge, right? Outside of this is considered it's not valid knowledge. Praman is that through which or by which the prama, valid knowledge, is received. There are four distinct fountains of correct knowledge. These four pramanas are perception, pratyaksha, inference, anuman, comparison, upamana, and testimony, shabda. Before discussing these sources of knowledge, the nature or definition of knowledge should first be examined, and the method for distinguishing correct knowledge from false knowledge should be determined. In Nyaya philosophy, Nyaya is divided into two major categories.
To be able to prove your point, you need to use those four pramanas. They should all be present?
No. It's just a matter of whatever you have to use. I mean, shabda, it's always based on that, but the person will have actual better understanding if you could bring it down to the point of pratyaksha, that they can see it. Right? So to connect the shabda and the senses, you use inference. Is that what I'm saying? But how much are you using of what? Then that's according to the situation. Is that what I'm saying?
This comparison is like analogy. Using of analogy is like part of this comparison.
Which one?
These four pramana, no? Perception, inference, comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So comparison is like the use of analogy.
Well, it'd be exactly explained what he means. Like that, because they have very specific meanings when they use it, so that's why they define it, so that you know. It's just, in other words, there's a very specific meaning, and they choose a word that best explains it. But it may not be that that word is how people in a contemporary environment use it. It's just what actually defines it, you know. So that way, then you're very, very clear. Otherwise, then, if you don't know the terms, then you can just discuss all day over the terms, and then that becomes, you know, like this. It's just bada. It's just discussion. It's not real. Okay. Two major categories: anubhava, experiential, and smriti, memory. Experiential knowledge is received through four pramanas mentioned above: perception, inference, comparison, and testimony. The second type of knowledge, that which is based on memory, is derived from the storehouse of one's own mind. But ultimately, these memories also depend on experiential knowledge, because no one can remember something he has not experienced. Right? So there's the direct that you're actually dealing with now, and that's what you remember that you dealt with before. Right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, between what's going on now and what someone remembers, they're not actually connected. Because something has gone wrong in the memory. So that's why it needs to be separated as a function, yes.
Doesn't Srila Prabhupada make the point that one dreams of a golden mountain, one may have not experienced it before, but one is simply putting together the
dream? Yes. Because so many times people do that, is that... you know, they experience one thing, and after some times they've heard of something else like that, and then they'll put them together. You know what I'm saying? You know, the temple president was very harsh and very, you know, strict and everything. And Hitler also was like that. And so I really had my complaint is how can the temple president, as a devotee, have one of those funny little mustaches? He never did, but then you put them together. That's the problem with memory.
Right.
Yeah.
So in that case, would that be memory or experiential knowledge, or like a third, something like that?
No, it would be from memory, but the problem is there's some fault in the memory. Okay. So that's why it's separated.
Yeah.
Because the memory being from it is from experiential knowledge.
Yeah.
But the problem is it may have some adjustments. Mm. Otherwise, if we were just basing it as experiential, we would just make it as a different part of our part of it. But the experiential knowledge is only gained through these four, right? But the difficulty is this memory is based on that. But you may remember some aspects, you may not.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So therefore, that's why then knowledge is divided into these two.
Oh.
Right?
So even experiential knowledge contains shabda, potentially. I get it.
Yes, because you experience it. That's what realization is.
Right.
Or you experience that you've heard it.
Right.
You know, you're hearing it. So the senses are working, you're hearing the knowledge.
Right.
And then you're then reversing it, you're seeing it through the senses.
Yeah.
Then it's pratyaksha. And when you're trying to connect the two, the Shabda and the Pratyaksha, that's where your inference is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So inference can be totally speculative, but inference can also be just the logical process. Does that make sense? If you're trying to establish Shabda, then inference is not speculative. If you're starting with the senses and then going into inference, then it can be speculative. Because where's the authority that you know that that's actually the facts, how it functions? You know, that's the difficult, that's where you have your theorems, is that they're so-called facts that no one's been able to disprove, but maybe there's a possibility. So it's like the Jainism, it's, you know, Shadva. Maybe someone could dispute it, so therefore it's a theorem. You know? Because they don't want to say absolutely this is the way it is, though they want to absolutely say there is no God, or there's this, or there's that. You know, it's doesn't make sense. Like, during the process of remembering, a memory is called up from its storehouse, right? Because the mind calls it out of the intelligence, and is then received as knowledge of an object, right? Because you're in a situation, and then it brings up a memory, and you can remember being in that situation before. So then you analyze what was that situation? Was it good or not? And if it was good, then you relax. And if it wasn't good, you figure out how to get out of there. Right? These two major categories of knowledge can be divided into two parts, valid and invalid. Right? So using either of them, experiential in a valid way, is good, but in an invalid way, it's also bogus. Right? Does that make sense? In the language of Nyaya philosophy, valid experiential knowledge is called praman, and non-valid experiential knowledge is called apraman. Prama can be received through perception, inference, comparison, and testimony. Therefore, there are four types of valid knowledge based on these four means. Aprama is divided into doubt, shamsaya, faulty cognition, brahma, or viparyaya, and hypothetical argument, tarka. So we can see here is what's invalid brings up these other things. So valid, it'll have these nice things, it'll go according to the logic very nicely. But when it's invalid knowledge, then all these difficulties will come up. Certain and unerring cognition, such as the visual perception of a chair, is valid knowledge because the knowledge is presented directly to the senses as it really is. Memory is not original knowledge because it is not experiential. It means it was, but it's not now. It is a mere reproduction of experiential knowledge. Knowledge based on memory can be either valid or invalid. Right? So the senses and the sense object, that's valid knowledge because it's right there. But what's from the mind may or may not be valid. Because with time and all that, you may adjust that. Of course, if you're just trying to figure out what's a chair and what's a rock, then that's another thing. But if you see the chair, but you can't see the elements of the Lord's potencies in that, also it has its validity as far as the form of chair goes, but it doesn't have anything when it goes for what's beyond that chair. You know? Yes.
Now, who is making the definition of valid and invalid?
That's Shabda. That it has to be based on authority. That's the importance. That's why, of these, Shabda is the most important, because it must be based on Shastra.
So their system is they first have Shabda and then they go through the experiential knowledge and then they do the inference. That's how it works?
No, you use the inference to get it projection, or you have, means in other case, there is the Shabda and there's something that's seen, but how to connect the two. That's where inferences work. Or you have the knowledge, but you don't know how to apply it, so you use inference to then connect it to the Pratyaksha. So in other words, the connection of what's seen and what's heard, that's where you use the other one. Like that, whichever way you're taking it. The difficulty is in the ascending process, is you see things with the senses. You want to come to a conclusion, but you don't know what Shabda is, so then you just make things up. So they come up with their own conclusions, which then become, you know, scientific facts. And then after 10 years, they say, before we thought, now we know. Yeah. And after 10 years, it'll be, before we thought, now we know. So it's just, you know, it's that's it's
the same logic. The philosophers for not having Shabda.
Yes.
The perception of the world.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why these ones are called Astik, because they're basing it on Shastra. But in their process of application, something's left out, so it doesn't come out actually so good. But in the other one, who knows what you come up with? That's
always exciting.
Yes, yeah, always exciting. Yeah. I mean, that's why they have. I mean, that's why they developed, you know, the French cafes. You know, yeah, sitting on the sidewalk, because otherwise, you know, what do you do? You know, it's like. Because you can't just talk, you know, you have to eat something and look around, you know, it's just like one of the ways to keep you busy.
Playground for the mind.
It's like you're off the street, but you're not exactly off the street, you know, so.
That could be a topic of discussion.
Yeah, yeah, so it's like.
It's very popular, you know, so many people come to France to experience.
Yes, yes, yes. So then it's experiential because they've heard. Yes.
And their memory.
Yes, yes. And then yeah, people's memories of how great it was, and the tea's not so good anymore, not like it used to be.
Yeah.
Certain and unerring cognition. Oh no, that was mentioned here. Okay, knowledge based on memory may be either valid or invalid depending on the correctness of the recollection of the experiential knowledge. So the experiential knowledge may be factual, but depending on your recollection, it may be good or not. Like one person says, I remember this, and others say, no, no, I was there, it was actually like that. So then it's a whole problem of that, because that's why then you have to bring in these other things of substance. That's why the experiential will be better, because now you're fighting over memories. Mm. But what's the actual facts? You know.
All right, on the law dispute, that's also a problem. We have to try to do a mediation. You have lots of recalling and memories. No, but I wanted to say this, but then the other person says, no, no.
Yeah.
It's all about reestablishing substance within the transaction.
Yes, yes. The difficulty is because, means there they use their, what do you call it? Yeah, pretext. Precedent. Mm-hmm. That's their authority. But still, that's just how one judge dealt with it. But because it means the system will only work if you acknowledge the authority of the judges is final. If you don't, then the whole system falls apart. So that's why it's basically you'd have to say dogma, you know, legalistic dogmas that the judges are always right, right? Because if not, then they come up with a judgment, then you could always bring it up, unlimitedly go on and never come to a conclusion. So when a judge makes a statement, so that's your praman. So then you quote, okay, and this one versus that one, and the judge said this. So therefore, then that's your shabda. And now you're trying to establish the shabda now within your argument and everything, right? While the other one's trying to, you know, show that, no, there's something else as praman, or your presentation is faulty, it's invalid, or, you know. So they're basically using this, but it's problem is because it's not shastric. It can get a little wild, and just whoever's the better, you know, how you say, at argument, or, you know, how you say, their presentation, their sentiment, or how they can sway the jury by their nice, you know, their drama, you know, like that, you know. So then, so I guess the actual thing to do would be take law and drama at the same time, right? You know, and specialize especially in you know, how you say, Shakespeare and those kind of things. You know, then you could, you'd be very good. You know, your closing speech would be very, very rousing. No, don't you think? Yeah, it would be a good. Yeah. Okay. A doubtful cognition cannot be called valid, praman, because it is not definite knowledge. Right, so, yeah. Faulty cognition, likewise, cannot be praman, because it is not true to the nature of its object. Right? So these are the things that are above. It means doubt, faulty cognition, and hypothetical. So doubtful can't be prama, faulty cognition can't be praman, and the nature and tarka cannot be praman because it itself is not knowledge. It's just arguing. Although it may help in drawing some conclusions about a fact, it is only a means of obtaining knowledge. Right? So these others aren't dealing with knowledge, but they may be used to get knowledge. So you can also sometimes, if someone's just talking all kinds of nonsense, you can talk other nonsense to just stop it. So you may use these things, or he uses something invalid, you use something else invalid, and just, you know, makes it absurd or something. So it means even someone who's dealing properly can use these if the person he's dealing with is using them.
So you can use it to show that the other party is not making sense?
Or? Yeah, or something like that. You know, it's just like sometimes we give examples, they're just absolutely absurd. But then it just, you know, okay, so then you... Like that. According to Nyaya philosophy, true knowledge is that which corresponds to the nature of its object. Otherwise, the knowledge is false. Right? In other words, what you're saying, if it doesn't actually connect to the facts of the object, it's not real.
Right.
So that's also why it's important that Shabda is there, because otherwise, for the philosopher, there's things he sees that your common person doesn't. So your common person will say it doesn't connect. But then that's why then Shabda is important, so that you can establish. To perceive a thing in its true nature is true knowledge. For example, the knowledge of a red rose is true if the rose is really red. But the knowledge of a red rose is white is not true because the rose is not white. Right? Does that make sense? So it would be, so you might get, yes, the red rose, and because of its nature of purity, so it's like white and this and that, but it's not actually, you know, it sounds nice, but it's not actual. No, it's red. You know. How can one know if the rose is truly red and not white? How is it possible to prove the validity or falsity of knowledge? Nyaya philosophy says that the validity or invalidity of knowledge depends on its correspondence or non-correspondence to the facts. For example, if one wants to have correct knowledge of sugar, one tastes it. If there is some powdery white crystal in the kitchen and one puts a pinch of it in his mouth thinking that it's sugar, he will be surprised and disappointed if he finds it is not, that it is salty and not sweet. Okay, he'd be more surprised if it happened to be, you know, ecstasy or cocaine.
But not necessarily disappointed.
Not yet, but not necessarily disappointed, yes. But he will have certain knowledge that what he had thought to be sugar is instead salt. True knowledge leads a person to successful practical activity, while false knowledge makes one helpless and leads to failure and disappointment. So we can see here is that as a logical process, it's very good, very solid. But what is left out of here, which is also left out of his philosophy, is the position of the Lord. So there is knowledge that you cannot know through logic. That's why it mentions that many times in Shastra. The Lord can't be known through logical argumentation, because otherwise that's the whole process, is that you can know something by knowing actually the facts about it. Right? The scripture says this, and we're actual, the experiential of dealing with it proves that they're connect. But that's all right in aparavidya. But in the paravidya, then it's only by the Lord's grace you can actually understand it. Otherwise, that's why we see is Lahiri Babu's son, even though he was a great learned scholar and a great logician, he didn't actually understand the purpose of the scriptures, which was to know the Lord, right? And to know the Lord in devotion. So that's withheld like that. So this is left out of this part. But the point is it's the same thing as by Krishna's grace, then the transcendental becomes perceptible to the senses. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that it still works in this way, but what's being left out here is this is pure just logical mechanics, real ones, but it leaves out actually perceiving the spiritual. Right? That's only by the Lord's grace, yes.
So without establishing this substance as the Lord, I mean, they could argue that this is not a rose, you're calling it a rose, but actually something else, and then they still unlimited. They're just shifting the concepts,
yes.
And they can't come to a conclusion because...
Yes, well, that's why Praman is there, because Praman, I mean, your Shabda establishes that this is what a rose looks like, and so this looks like that, and, you know, has all the attributes that the Shastra says. And, you know, so therefore by the senses, and we see that the local, you know, colloquial, everybody calls it that, so that you want to call it a hippopotamus is improper. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay, footnote 5. True knowledge ultimately means to perceive everything in connection to Krishna. Right? So this is where his weakness in his philosophy is. The mechanics of how he's going to go about it are great, but the problem is he's leaving out the mercy of the Lord. Right, so they're just working. If I'm logical and go through everything, then I'll actually understand what's truth, and that truth will set me free. Right, like that. So the work at getting the truth will set you free, or the truth itself sets you free, or just the work sets you free.
Karma and the Gyan version.
Okay, something. In any case, you'll be free.
Yeah.
True knowledge ultimately means to perceive everything in connection to Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.29.69 and 2.9.34, it is stated. Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Right? So in other words, he sees everything. So for him, he actually is perceiving everything according to the transcendental facts, right? But it's only by the association of devotees that that's possible. So it's not that the devotee is logically explaining it to the non-devotee, and it's because of that logical explanation that that's why he understood it. It's because by associating with the devotee, with the proper attitude, that association has awoken that understanding. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's also faulty to say that, you know, you have to be very technical in preaching in a particular way in a particular situation. It may be, people would appreciate it more, but that's not actually what works. What's working is the association.
So,
yes.
So that's just describing what works.
Yes, describing what works, and maybe you appreciate the devotee because you appreciate the devotee because of that appreciation. Therefore, the Lord's pleased. Therefore, then, you know, you'll get some understanding. But if you spoke in a different way, you wouldn't appreciate. So that's the only thing, is that whether they'll take advantage of the Vaishnava association or not. That's the only thing. But it's not that the technique itself is what creates the understanding. That's the faultiness in the logic here. Logic will show you how the facts of what is perceivable, but the point is how. But but they, it's not that they'll bring you to the point of perceiving the transcendental, right? But even you're explaining the transcendental, you use the same process. You know what I'm saying? Here's again that overlap between the nitya and naimittic and like that. The same set thing.
Maharaj, you gave an example previously of when we joined, sometimes things which are observed, like Krishna lifting a mountain, was observed, but all of a sudden it became perfectly logical.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Because Krishna is kind. It's just like one devotee was telling me that his friend wanted to go to the temple to take prasad on Sunday, the Sunday program. So, but he was, I think, you know, in his own, how he described it, he's just a, you know, just a downright demon. So he just went, okay, because it's free food. You know, didn't believe in God, nothing, and just thought it was all crazy. But his friend went, and he liked it, so he went with him. But after 9 Sunday feasts, he joined. Right? So the point was, I'm not sure if the friend joined, but in any case, that's also a funny thing. Sometimes is the pious guy doesn't join, and the demon, then he's the one that actually becomes a devotee, right? So then, So it's by that association, by taking Vishad, by taking part in the process, it awakens. So all it is this is the recommended processes that create awakening. Right? But that awakening means these are the processes that please the Lord, therefore you become awake. Right? But the point is because it's pastime, there has to be an activity with forms. You know, interaction of individuals. But you do that as recommended, Krishna's pleased. Right? But it's just that interaction is not actually what causes it.
That's much of the time.
Yeah. Actually, we're saying sadhana bhakti isn't the cause of bhakti. The sadhana bhakti is the means by which that awakening from the association of devotees happens. Right? So this is the recommended process that other devotees have used. This is how they associate with each other. Because how do two persons who are awake associate? So that's sadhana. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that the sadhana makes you awake, it's someone's awake does these things. Right? So by performing those, then you're in association with those who are awake. So in this way, then that consciousness is what you gain by the Lord's mercy. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that there's these subtle things. We only discuss this because we're in illusion that there's substance in the material form and endeavor. And that the material form and endeavor is actually what gets the results, when it's actually just the Lord's blessings. So even for the gross materialist, it's only because of the sanction of the supersoul and the carrying out of that order by the material nature through the modes that you get your results. But you think, I did this. But it's actually happening on another platform altogether. Right? But in the spiritual world, yoga maya, you don't worry about the process, the technicalities of the process. You just involve yourself in it. Right? Even though there, it's still the same thing. It's still by Krishna's grace and yoga maya, they're arranging it. Right? But it's in connection to Krishna, so it's fun. But here we're doing the same thing, but not in connection with Krishna. That's why we analyze things and break it down so we see it's not actually that. Yes.
We also see that people who are very successful in the material world, they also just get involved. I mean, they involve themselves in the process and be present. That's what the same principle.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, someone who's very successfully materially, if he's got the right attitude, means successful because of his endeavor. Not that if he's proud of his results or his knowledge, then he'll have trouble in Krishna consciousness. But if he knows that you have to work hard to materially prosper, then he'll follow the same thing. Well, therefore, if I'm going to apply it to spiritual, I have to work hard. So that's what will be successful, is that application. So that's why it's though it may be more difficult to catch the attention of a materially absorbed, successful person. Once you do, the results of making them a devotee will be greater. But someone who's not very expert, it's easier to catch your attention, but it won't be as dynamic afterwards. Yeah. Right? Culturally. Now, if they understand the importance of it, even though before they have been materially not successful, then they may be very successful spiritually, simply because they apply themselves. So the point is the application. The one materially, he's doing that, so there's every chance he'll do that spiritually also. While the other one is not doing that, so he may also not do that in the beginning. But with time, as he's purified in association, he'll get serious, so therefore he'll advance. Right? Does that make sense? But you also have those who are willing to work hard and get results, but they don't have that faith that material energy can produce it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they appear to be a lazy person. Mm-hmm. So when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, now they have something real to apply their energy into. So they'll do even quicker than the person who has faith that my work is what gets it done. Because then eventually the one who's materially successful has to deal with, I'm not the doer. Right? Yeah. While the other one doesn't have that problem. You know, so that's the point, is that every individual has their particular individual strengths and weaknesses. So that's why things are analyzed, so that you can understand what the strengths are, keep those, and what's the weaknesses, then avoid that. Okay. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it was out in relation to me, has no reality. So if we're actually getting down to reality, it must be connected to him. Mm. That's what Nyaya is not actually doing. Mm. You know, so he's taking reality as can be perceived by someone who doesn't have the blessings of the Lord. And you can get to the liberated platform. It means the Lord will bless if you follow that process very strictly over a long, long period. Right? You know, like that.
The absence of reality, because being the three modes will change after, so even the form will change, so there's no...
Yeah. But also just what you think it is, it's not there, because it actually is the Lord. Everything is the Lord, but we're thinking that it's not the Lord. Okay. And so it's actually not real. It means the form is actually there, the pillar is actually there, but to think that the pillars hold... The bricks and the mortar are what is holding the building up. No, it's Krishna's potency that is imbued in bricks and cement. But then even as we're discussing here, it's the Lord's potency that holds the elements together, that it would be the earth. So therefore, that's why they can stay there. But if the Lord's potency of holding it together wasn't there, it wouldn't stay as a brick or as cement. You know? And both of those are earth. It would just go back to its atoms. So you would see no form. There would be no earth to deal with, or no, you know, elements to make into cement. Does that make sense? So that way, then they're seeing a higher metaphysical reality, but they're not actually seeing the Lord's position. You know, but why would that be there? You know what I'm saying? So they're acknowledging the Lord up to an extent that therefore they would be able to get liberated. But they're not acknowledging that why have all these forms? Because if all these forms are simply a problem, why would I have to work so hard to get out of them? And that will make me happy. Why would they be there in the first place? That's not explained. You know what I'm saying? Why are there forms in this world and relationships and interactions and results in, you know, of endeavor, if there wasn't some actual ultimate purpose for them? Right? Because if it's a matter of, oh, well, if it's like this, then I'll get inspired to, you know, get back to my non-cognitive state of, you know, fully awoken sleep. But then you could just have, you know, a big box that's just white inside with nothing happening, and just, you know, fill it up with people, and they get bored after a while. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't have to have all this to get them to be bored.
Also interesting that you could get inspired to go comatose.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, so I'm saying
paradoxical.
Yeah, but why have all this there? So that means there's a reality beyond your understanding, the further metaphysical reality than the physical. You know, there's that transcendental reality. So that's what's left out. So they're getting the physical and metaphysical, but they're not getting into the transcendental. Though they acknowledge that the Lord is there and there is that concept, but they're not taking it that there's a whole world in activities. They're just taking it God's there and he's transcendental. So you know that. So here's the material world and God's there beyond it, he's transcendental. But that what's that beyond means beyond that material there's a whole interaction, the spiritual world and the Lord and the devotees. That's not... Is that... Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, in the previous verse it has already been concluded that in any stage of the cosmic manifestation, its appearance, its sustenance, its growth, its interactions of different energies, its deterioration, and its disappearance. So that means everything is functioning on these six, because the Lord's potency is there. Because the jiva is life, right? So that's when the jiva is there, these things are manifest. But those potencies, those are there because these are potencies of the Lord's, of the Lord. All has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. And as such, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relation with the Lord, and whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. Right? So if it's not connected to the Lord, it's not real. Its only realness is its connection. Because nothing can exist without the Lord, it should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. Right? So the illusion itself is also the Lord's. Because otherwise the Maya bodies, they don't know where it came from. Buddhists don't know where it came from, you know, like that, or, you know, it's like that. Okay, well, you know, the devil did it, but then, you know, the devil, you know, why, how did that happen? Mm. So the point is if one angel could fall, another angel falls, how do we know that there's not different angels managing it? You know, why is it one place is different from the other? So it could be two different angels managing it, right? So you actually have different kinds of hell, right? No? Yeah, so thanks. The right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relation with the Lord is called yoga maya, or the energy of union. And the wrong conception of detaching a thing from its relation with the Lord is called the Lord's daivi maya, or mahamaya. Both the mayas also have connection with the Lord, because nothing can exist without being related to Him. But one is direct, and we understand the connection. The other is indirect, that we don't understand. As such, the wrong conception of detaching relationships from the Lord is not false, but illusory. Right? Mm. You know, we're saying it's not real. No, it's real, but it's illusion that you can do that. Mm. You know, it means there is no such thing. There is the illusion. Your illusion is that it's an illusion. It's actually connected to the Lord. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness. But the sunlight outside the reflection can drive out the darkness completely. In darkness, no one can see the things in a room. Therefore, a person in the dark is afraid of snakes and scorpions, although there may not be such things. But in the light, the things in the room can be clearly seen, and the fear of snakes and scorpions is at once removed. Therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not the reflective personalities who have no touch with the Lord. Right? Because they're a potency of the Lord, so there's some aspect of truth. But if we're only trying to work out the whole based on that small little bit of reflective element, then that's not going to work. No one should hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from a person who does not believe in the existence of the Lord. Such a person is already doomed, and any association with such a doomed person makes the associator also doomed. Right? Because otherwise, here's your method of getting out, but it's being projected wrong. It's being explained wrong. So therefore, you won't be able to use the thing properly. Either you'll use it wrongly, or you'll see that it's not valid, and so therefore you'll drop it. So that's why one should only hear about Krishna from the devotees. Otherwise, others will give a problem. Okay, so that was praman. Well, that was the knowledge, right? That was so we understand how knowledge works. So now we will discuss perception, the first of these four. As mentioned earlier, according to Nyaya, there are four sources of valid experiential knowledge, or prama: perception, inference, comparison, and testimony, among which perception is foremost. Most people believe that whatever is experienced through perception must be true, and they do not further test the data that are received via the senses. Nyaya philosophy, however, is very critical in this respect and makes a thorough examination of perception. So it's making perception as prominent, but that perception must be exactly right. If there's any fault in it, then your whole premise is wrong. So they go to great lengths to make sure that what you perceive is correct. Perception is knowledge produced by the contact of the senses with the objects of the world. For example, one has perceptual knowledge of a table when a table comes in contact with the eyes. To be considered valid, the contact of the senses with their objects must be clear and doubtless. Right? Because that's what I mentioned before. If there's a doubt or some other thing, then it can't be counted as real. The perception of something a long distance away as being either a bush or a bear is doubtful. Is a doubtful and indefinite cognition, and is therefore not true perception. Right? In the distance, you see something, you can't tell if it's a bush or a bear. You can't count it as real perception. So you can't therefore base some process or conclusion on that. Mistakenly perceiving a rope as a snake may be neither doubtful nor indefinite, but it is a false and therefore invalid perception. But you don't have doubts about it. You're convinced that it's a snake, right? But it's not. It's just an invalid perception. The one is you can't perceive it properly. You can't quite tell. But this one is you perceive, but your conclusion is wrong. So therefore, in either way, it's not valid, right? So it's not just, if I have a doubt, it's not valid. You may have no doubt, but it still can be not valid.
Maharaj, so on a psychological sphere, what the person is trying to achieve is to bring you to a more, let's say, precise perspective. But when it's not really, let's say, very close, that can never really come to it.
No, it can never. Because what's the premise? That's the thing, is they'll have their premise that any improper perception is keeping you from functioning within the greater community to, you know, just find your place and enjoy yourself. Because their point is enjoy yourself. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you find sometimes devotees, when they have emotional or some difficulties, they go to the psychologist. In the beginning, they actually, you know, feel they're gaining some benefit because they're able to bring them to a more balanced perception, right? But the problem comes is then once they get to that point, that's where it gets dangerous, because their whole purpose of bringing you to the neutral state is to bring you to the positive state of sense gratification. And so then you see such devotees tend to get involved in sense gratification. And then because now they found new life, they encourage others, and then your whole yatra disappears. Like that.
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Does that make sense? Because their premise of the whole thing, their you know, what's their authority is wrong. So that's why it's dangerous. But not that the mechanics of it don't have some validity, but the problem is that, so the same with the nyaya, you're going through everything very nicely, but if it doesn't end in the conclusion of everything's connected to the Lord, and therefore we as servants should serve the Lord through that, then it's dangerous.
Okay. Yeah. So this process of devotees going to some outsourcing for help.
Yes.
It's, can we say it's just not necessary? Because they don't know where to stop.
The main problem is they don't know where to stop. You know? Because it can have, at the same time as the way they deal, sometimes it also, they can already be planting these seeds in the beginning. But, you know, it's there. But much of the time is they themselves don't know what to do. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you say so many things and then you wait for them to respond. They don't respond. You know? Well, what should I do? Well, what do you think you should do? No, but you should say something. Well, what do you want me to say? You know what I'm saying? It's just that they've been 4 years of schooling how to give these answers that you can't do anything with, you know. You have to come up, in other words, you have to solve your own problem.
So,
yeah, and they get the money, right? You do the work, they get the money. Clever, right? So you have to hand that to them. You know. Does that make sense? But if they, because their conclusion is basically going to ultimately whatever situation you're in, that you are enjoying yourself, you know, that you feel your, you know, whole complete entity that's enjoying yourself, that has your place within the society, so you can enjoy. That's what they're trying to get you to. So it's difficult. That's why the Vedic psychology is so much superior, because the reason that those problems are coming up is because you actually think you're the body or mind. Right? Because why is someone going? So some relationship has been lost. Right? You know, either something with the family, husband and wife break up, the children, you know, die, or something happens, or you had a big position, you lose that, or you had money, you lost that. You know, if you had good health, you lose that. So one's material position is compromised. But the only solution is actually understanding we're not that. You understand? So that's why Sarota Maharaj wrote that Vedanta psychology. Because he studied all the psychology that there is. And it doesn't give any answers. So it's only the Vedanta psychology that actually deals. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't sound as good on the mind. The mind likes the other. They know how to speak to make your mind feel really good. You know what I'm saying? Not a whole lot of couches around you can lay down in the temple, right? Then just talk all you like, you know? But I'm sure the temple presidents would install them if they knew that you'd lie down on them, talk, and they'd get $300 an hour. I think they would install. You'd probably find wall to wall. I'm sure it would happen. No? Huh? Could work.
Since you don't have to give answers, you can just have like 5 talking at once and just sit there, and they will then all pay afterwards.
Yeah, but you want to make each one of them feel special.
Oh, that's true.
That's
true.
That's the difficulty.
Can let them talk to the deities.
Huh?
Can let them talk to the deities.
Oh, okay, yeah. And give donations. Then if they're complaining they don't get an answer, you won't get an answer from the psychologist either. So. You have to work it out yourself, so this will be revealed from within. So. Yeah.
Could work.
Sneak a little
tape on the altar. Yeah. Okay, Nyaya philosophy has several different systems of classification of perception. According to the first kind of classification, there are two types of perception: lokika, ordinary, and alokika, extraordinary. Yeah, ordinary and interdeterminate. So ordinary has two parts, or that interdeterminate is this alokika is the extraordinary. Oh, extraordinary is alokika. Oh, okay, and then there's something in between. So you have ordinary and extraordinary. Okay. When a perception is derived from direct contact of a sense object, that is ordinary perception. Oh, that is ordinary perception. When the object is not directly present to the senses, but is conveyed to the senses through unusual modes, then that perception is called alokika, extraordinary. Modes of perception are either external, bahya, or internal, manasa. In external perception, any or all of the faculties of sight, hearing, touch, taste, and smell are involved in bringing the object to mind. Thus, there are 5 kinds of external perceptions, bahya: visual, auditory, tactile, gustatory, and olfactory. The 5 senses of hearing, touching, seeing, tasting, and smelling are all gross senses, while mind is the 6th subtle sense. The mind is the internal faculty that perceives the qualities of soul, such as desire, aversion, pleasure, pain, and cognition. So you get the external perception, and then you get the feelings of what you have towards that perception.
Right?
Because those are factual, that you have them, but it's not necessarily that would be what you should be feeling, but whatever it is, that is what you're feeling. Right, so therefore the external and internal. Okay. Is there any more on the point of the extraordinary when the object is not directly present to the senses but is conveyed to the senses through unusual modes?
That's
all he has. I'm just trying to think of how that would be, you know. Unusual modes, like Picasso or something.
That's an unusual mode, yeah. Super soul, intuition.
I'm not sure that fit, or it says that. No, I guess that would be sensible. I was going to say, what about the band in Germany? They would take on You know, government was going to demolish something, so they hire out to private companies. So this band would take it on, and then they would work into the destruction of the building into their music. And they would get all the audience to come and do the work, so they would get, you know, paid for the gig and get paid from the government for breaking down the building.
German efficiency.
Yeah, no, very.
Extraordinary.
So I'm just okay. Extraordinary. Must be something. Oh, he doesn't get into classes, association, institution. It goes down later. He gets into that because there's classes, association, intuition. Okay. In Nyaya philosophy, ordinary perception, lokika, is either indeterminate, nearly kalpa, or determinate, sabikalpa. Indeterminate perception is the indeterminate, nirvikalpa. Indeterminate perception is the primary cognition of a thing before judgment is used to specify diverse characteristics. For example, in the first glance at a table, one perceives the mere existence of the table without comprehending its color, shape, and other specific characteristics. Okay. One perceives only a general appearance without details. Only upon further inspection does one recognize that it is, say, a round wooden table with a drop leaf. Right? You understand drop leaf? It means things that you can either drop the ends off of or take out something to make it smaller or bigger. This determinate perception is the cognition of an object that registers some definite characteristics about it. Right. Determinate perception is always preceded by indeterminate perception, and determinate perception is always valid knowledge because it is definite and explicit. Right. So it's almost like the ordinary, the indeterminate being is in its position, but it's dealing with the... Oh, because then the indeterminate could also be used with the extraordinary also. Means there'd be the general. In other words, indeterminate is the general characteristic. Then the determinate is the specifics. Right. So then nirvikalpa means it means no specifics. And sa means with. So with specifics. You know, because let's say for establishing something, you say, okay, it's a table. But only if it's a wooden table, then it has some meaning in the situation. Well, if it was an aluminum table, it wouldn't. Right, so therefore, then the nirvikalpa wouldn't be enough. Right, the general perception wouldn't be enough to establish what you want. It's only the detailed would be enough to establish. Okay. Determine. Okay. So determinate is always valid knowledge because it is definite and explicit. Right, because the other one's not explicit, so then it has very little. Very limited application. Nyaya claims there are three kinds of extraordinary, alokika perceptions. Okay. Perception of classes, samanya lakshana, perception based on association, jnana lakshana, and intuitive perception, yogaja. The realization that all people are mortal is an instance of the external perception of classes, samanya lakshana. And it's just a general thing. How does one know that all people are mortal? One cannot come to this realization by ordinary perception, because the mortality of all people in all times cannot be physically perceived by the senses. But because a person is never perceived without his personhood, that is, the class essence or universality of human beings that all human beings share, then a conclusion can be made based on that essence. A person is known as a person because of the presence of personhood in him. Right? So in there, you can see he's dealing specifically with just the personhood. He's not actually dealing with personness. Does that make sense? The personhood means the qualities of being a person. But the personness, why those qualities are there in the first place? Why would there be personhood? Why do humans have that nature? Why not something else? But that's Krishna. He's established that. So personness is there. So then his potency established and manifests personhood. Right? And so then by checking, you can understand. Right? You know, it's like you have the grains of rice in the pot. You squeeze one, you understand all of them. So that would be extraordinary. Because you haven't, you know, squeezed each one rice all the way through. Because you could do it, but then afterwards, you know, when it comes to the time of the offering, or afterwards, you know, one the rice will be cold by the time you get them all out there, etc. So is the rice done or not? You know, spend half an hour. No, I'm almost done. Just only another few to squeeze. I think that's
flat rice.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's the original flat. Yeah, because by the time you actually finish, it's all gotten cold and hard, so then now it's a matter of you mix it with water and then. Yeah. This, so what you understand what I'm saying is the philosophy doesn't deal with the person-ness so much. Vedanta does. Because that's the point, is it's Krishna that makes personhood a valid. Or a value.
Personness would be equality?
Yes, personness would be equality. Personhood would be what manifests. The category. This direct perception of personhood is the medium through which all people, or the class of people, are perceived. To perceive personhood means to perceive all people as individuals in which this characteristic resides. Right? So that's why someone who understands personhood, he can go anywhere, and with any group of persons, he can deal properly. Right? So. The perception of all people is due to the perception of the universality of humanity in all people. Therefore, this type of knowledge is called the extraordinary perception of classes. Right? It's extraordinary perception because it's beyond the senses to perceive all of it. But this is by class, by group. Okay, so we'll stop here. And we'll continue tomorrow with Jnana and Yoga Jaya.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Sanitaya Gaurapnega. Yes, evening class will be there today. At 4 o'clock. Let's see. By the another chapter. 9. Yeah, because we're doing 8 now. Yeah, because when they finish 8 today, he's worried about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.